This is Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
Welcome back. It's the third hour of Caroline and Jonathan on a Monday morning. That was In Excess and Devil Inside. And for the lunchtime session, the lunchtime debate, whatever we're calling it now, we are very pleased to have in the studio with us Julian Critchley.
Hello.
And it would help if I turned your microphone up properly, wouldn't it, Julian? Shall we say that again?
Hello. I'll say hello again then.
Hello again. We now have you in the room. That's fantastic. So, well, perhaps it's easier, Julian, if I ask you to introduce yourself to the listeners.
I'm Julian Critchley. I was the Labour candidate in the general election last year. I'm now the chair of the Ireland Labour Party. I'm a Ryde Town councillor, although I don't sit on Ryde Town Council as a Labour person. We all stood as independents or not party political. And by trade, I'm a teacher. I'm also the father of three teenage girls, which is why I'm losing my hair.
Well, you've probably answered most of the questions I was going to ask you in the first part of the show. So, are you still teaching? Are you still actively employed, or does the Labour Party take all your time?
No to both of those questions. The Labour Party doesn't take all of my time. I'm not teaching at the moment. I'm registered with a couple of supply agencies, but I very much pick and choose whether I feel like doing it or not.
What's the area you teach?
I'm a history teacher. I teach history and perhaps inevitably politics. History is just old politics, you know, and politics is just new history. That's my speciality.
Right. You gave us an outline of your roles in the Isle of Wight Labour movement, if I can call it that. Day to day, what sort of thing does that mean you're doing in terms of, I assume part of your role is developing the profile and standing of the Labour Party on the Isle of Wight?
The main goal is, well, there's different aspects of it. One is the day-to-day running of the party. You know, you have to make sure that the meetings happen, that the minutes get written, that the rooms are booked and the bills get paid. So there's that element of it. You help with the committee. And then there's the element which, if you like, I'm slightly more interested in, which is how do we build, I mean, you called it the movement, I think that was the right word for it. How do we build a Labour movement on the island which will put us in a position to win here? Because, you know, we're not here as a hobby. We're not here just to pass the time. We're here to try and win both on the council and at the next general election. If we split the island into two seats, now that May seems to have done a deal with her DUP friends, then our view is there's a chance for two Labour MPs on the Isle of Wight, and we're very serious about that. So a lot of what I do is trying to build that profile, trying to recruit members, trying to turn members from people who just pay the membership in people who pay the membership and are willing to go out and do some stuff for us, and just make sure that nothing of significance happens on the island without the Labour Party saying this is what we think, so that people know that there's an alternative that they can choose at the next elections.
Okay, that's a really interesting resume, and I think that will have helped a lot of people understand what a political group on the island does. Perhaps we'll come back to speak a little more about the hopes and aspirations for Labour on the Isle of Wight in a moment, but it'd be nice to ask a little bit more about you. Are you an island man, or you've moved here?
No, I'm originally from St Helens, but the big sort of coal mining and dirty St Helens in the northwest, not the
I suppose lovely, the little dirty St Helens. But
it's not dirty.
I used
it's beautiful.
To live in. I can say that. I used to live there 40 years.
No, I'm originally from up in Lancashire. But actually, I left there at 18 to go to university. Never really went back. So I spent most of my life in London. And then in 2016, our youngest was about to go to secondary school, and we thought, well, if we don't move now, we probably never will. And we definitely felt it was time for a move. And we came to the Isle of Wight and never looked back, really.
So what was it attracted to you to the island? Because it's interesting, because a lot of people would say at that point in their children's life, we're getting into politics, and there are a lot of issues with education on the island, and some people would say that's a reason to move away from the island, secondary education.
Well there's a couple of things there. Firstly, I don't agree with that. I don't agree that there are problems with the island's education system. I think, you know, I'm not going to get onto education, because obviously that's my personal passion, and I can rant for a very long time. But I
if we need to fill some time at the end, I'll just
anytime you've got 6 or 7 hours to fill. But I don't buy that. I think the schools here, do a good job with the kids who go to those schools. You know, certainly all three of my girls are at Ride Academy, and they all do well at Ride Academy. You know, my eldest just came out with 9 GCSEs. And,
oh, fantastic. Congratulations.
And to give you an idea of how unexpected that was, I'd given her an incentive that if she got 7 GCSEs, I'd get her a car. So that's another reason for losing my hair and my bank balance.
So now it's a convertible.
we have a difference of opinion over what sort of car I promised, but we'll come back to that. So I didn't think that was a problem. I also taught briefly at the studio school this year, which you know has obviously had a very tough
sure,
year.
Yeah.
And there's some kids there. You know, every kid at the studio school had left their previous school at the end of year 9, and by and large, one doesn't leave secondary school in year 9 if everything's going really well where you already are. So there were a lot of kids there perhaps a bit disenchanted, disaffected, wanted to try something new. And I thought what that school did and those dedicated teachers in that school did with those kids was really amazing. I was really impressed with them. So I don't buy this idea that education's failing on the island. I think there are issues, but I'm not going to go there. So I'm going to come. Do you want me to come back to why we came to the Isle of Wight? Because it wasn't about the schools.
No, but that was really interesting, because I think that gives a balance, because it's one of those, sometimes I think, almost urban myth type things.
Yes.
That people talk about. Yeah. So your story, though, you came to the island.
Okay, it's very soppy.
We like soppy.
Right. My daughter adopted, and when we adopted them, you know, it was obviously, we went from 0 to 3 very quickly, which was quite challenging in a lot of ways. Mm. And the first family holiday we ever had was on the Isle of Wight, because it seemed to be sufficiently far away from home, but at the same time, everyone spoke the right language and we knew we could get in the car and drive back home if it all went completely wrong. And we stayed in Seaview, and the holiday was absolutely idyllic. It was just wonderful. And it implanted such powerful emotional memories in us that when it came to moving out of London, it was almost as if there was no other choice. You know, I did offer the wife the opportunity of going back to St Helens and living up north, and her line was, I'm not going north, so that was the end of that. So she's the boss. So we came to the Isle of Wight, and it was very much about those really strong positive memories that we had of when the kids were very, very little. And it's
that's
been
a great
successful
story. That's not soppy at all.
Yeah, it's quite soppy.
and the one other thing, we have to break for ads shortly, but the one other question I'd like to ask about Julian Critchley, the man, is what got you into politics? Have you always, I mean, you've got a career as a teacher. Have you got into politics recently, or is politics a long-standing thing? And what is it that made you become politically active? That's probably what I'm really asking.
Okay. Well, I've always been interested, you know, and I've been a member of a political party, not always the Labour Party, don't tell anyone.
Since it's all right, no one listens to this.
That's fine. Since I was in my mid-20s. So I've always been interested, but I worked in the civil service for a long time where you can't really be politically active.
Sure, yeah.
And then I became a teacher where, again, you can be politically active, but there are constraints on that. And also, as a teacher, you just don't have time. You know, you don't have time in the evening to be going out to the meetings and doing the things. And then when the kids came along, I really didn't have time. So really, it was all on the back burner. I was interested but not involved. Coming to the island and becoming the primary carer, because my wife was still working in London, gave me the time to do more, and so really it was having the opportunity. I've always had the interest, but I got the opportunity when I came to the island.
Right. Okay, that's fascinating. So I think we should break for a few words from our sponsors, and then Julian will come back and we will talk a bit more about Labour and as we called it a moment ago, the Labour movement on the Isle of Wight. Whoops. And I will try and make this system work properly. So I'm not too good at the system sometimes. You're hearing someone live breaking down on air technically. Let's see what we get.
Our island, our Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
As a business, you have a legal responsibility to dispose of your waste in line with current government legislation. Island Environmental Hygiene Limited are an island company specialising in the collection of sanitary, clinical and hazardous waste, working closely with the Environment Agency to ensure your waste is disposed of legally. Our services are tailored to meet your needs. To find out more, visit islandhygiene.com or call 721 943.
Did you have a good day with Grandpa yesterday?
Yeah, we went to the Shipwreck Centre and Maritime Museum with Tarleton Barnes. It was amazing. They had loads of things found deep under the sea.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like gold and silver coins, old diving suits and a real mermaid. I even did a treasure hunt and got a prize.
That sounds great. Did Grandpa have fun?
He loved it. And he loved the free parking.
That sounds like Grandpa.
The Shipwreck Centre and Maritime Museum. A real flavour of the maritime world. For more, go to shipwreckcentre.com.
Do you suspect there may be some bullying going on within your company? Have you wondered what, if anything, you can do to stop it? Break the Cycles one-day workshop, Thriving in the Workplace, is the solution to any bullying that may be impacting the smooth running of your organisation, leading to increased staff turnover. There may be negative PR for your company if it's associated with bullying and nothing is done. For more information about this one-day workshop on workplace bullying, click breakthecycle.org.uk or email hello@breakthecycle.org.uk. Or you can call us on 01983 754 666 for an informal chat.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, has a limited number of advertising spots available. Give your business the boost it needs and reach across the island. Email our team today, marketing@vectisradio.fm.
Was Mary Wells here on Vectis FM 104.6 on a Monday. Well, it's lunchtime rather than morning now, isn't it? And she was just helping me cover a few technical repairs there. think we've got it sorted now. I think, Caroline, you might be doing the desk a bit more often than me, because I do seem to make a few technical errors.
I'm not going to comment. I'm going to be a politician. I'm not going to comment.
Well, talking politicians, we're very pleased to have in the studio. That was slick, wasn't it?
I'm slick.
Whoa. I've been trying to tell you that.
Almost children's BBC standard.
Thanks, Julian.
Well, we have to call ourselves the Chuckle. We can't call ourselves the Chuckle Brothers.
No, we can't.
But we have Julian Critchley in the studio from the Isle of Wight Labour Party movement, call it what we will. Caroline, you were...
Yeah, Julian, I've noticed over the last... certainly over the last couple of years, the Labour Party seems to have a lot more of a presence around the island. You're at Fairweather Festival, you're at the Chael Show, you're taking part in the Pride March. And what are the sort of things that people are saying to you when you go to Chael Show, for example? Do you get people coming up to you saying the same old thing? You know, is it a complaint about the ferries? Is it, what sort of things do they say, just to give us an idea of people's concerns on the island?
I think, look, you get two types of people who will approach you at these events. The first type are coming up to have a moan. So you do get the occasional person who comes up and goes, Labour, oh, Jeremy Corbyn supports the IRA. And those people, you sort of smile and nod and yeah, try and move on. But the majority of people who come up to us are either interested in joining the party or interested in what we do on the island, how to get involved. You know, some of those, and some of those will never develop into anything other than a polite conversation at the time. Some of them, you then find those people will turn up to the next branch meeting, and if you're really lucky, some of them will turn into proper activists who will go out and knock on doors with you at some point. In terms of what they raise, the generic complaints about life on the island, ferries inevitably comes up quite a lot. Cuts to local services. The St Mary's is another hardy perennial that is constantly there. And probably if I had to rank them, I'd say St Mary's was at the top in terms of people coming and telling you often quite harrowing stories of how difficult their treatment's been, which usually involves an element of having to go to the mainland on a regular basis and the inconvenience and expense that's involved in that. So I'd say St Mary's would be top, the ferries would be next, and then you've got people who are just, it's great to see you, how do we get involved?
And I'm glad you mentioned Jeremy Corbyn, because my next question was going to be, what do you think of Jeremy Corbyn?
Well, I voted for Corbyn twice. First, when he got elected in 2015, and then after the attempted coup in 2016. And I think, you know, that this is one of my bugbears is that there is a tendency in the media, not obviously this wonderful radio station, but you know, the national media, to portray everyone who voted for Corbyn as some sort of weird Trotskyite entryist cultist. You know, add your sort of negative term.
Snowflake is a term that I can't stand.
And as if, you know, we all go home and we have a little altar set up in our living room to dear old Jezza, and we pray at it. I mean, it's just nonsense. I voted for Corbyn because in 2015 he was the only one of the four leadership candidates who was offering policies which were moving Labour towards what I would see as a more social democratic country. All the other three were basically adopting versions of, oh dear, we've lost, we have to move further to the right. And I, like most of the members, thought that no, that's not the answer we want. That's not where we think we should go. We think we should be trying to make people's lives easier, not just accepting that people's lives are hard and shrugging.
But the media also gives the impression that young people in vast numbers support Jeremy Corbyn.
Yeah, well, they do.
How do we get those people to vote?
We had a certain degree of success in 2017 getting them to vote. And what you've got here is a battle, because the Tories are engaged in some really undemocratic practices at the moment in trying to remove people from the voting register. You know, in particular, they've attacked university registration schemes, which used to mass register young people. And they deliberately got rid of those so that young people don't register. They've also made it harder for people in temporary accommodation to register, which again affects young people more than everyone else. And that's not an accident. You know, these things are deliberate. They are deliberately trying to knock young people off the register because they know that young people are overwhelmingly less likely to vote for them. And so we've got, as a party, to try and get those people onto the register. And one of the things that I'm hoping to get going here on the island in the next couple of months, actually, is a mass voter registration scheme where we will send Labour Party activists out, knocking on doors, trying to get young people to register, giving them the information that they need to register to vote. Because we have to do it, because, you know, the Tories are overwhelmingly supported by the older part of the population. You know, that they, once you get over 65, it's something like 75% of voters vote Tory, whereas every age under 49, the majority of people vote Labour. And so we need to get younger people, and I love the fact that I get to count myself as a younger person there, because I'm 48. We need to get young people onto the register, and obviously we're not trying to get older people off the register, but if they forgot to register, that wouldn't be a bad thing.
So, and do you think, I think you effectively said Jeremy Corbyn is a very positive factor. I mean, what you're suggesting is a positive factor in terms of democracy and getting young people engaged with politics, because I think any of us who've been involved in politics in any way have always seen over the last 10, 20 years a dropping away of young people engaging with politics and political issues.
Yeah, look, I think that's true. And to be honest, I didn't blame them until 2015, because we had a Labour Party and a Conservative Party which were, you know, I'm sure some people will argue this, but they were offering different shades of the same colour. And you know, the Conservative Party was saying, we've got a Thatcherite settlement, or neoliberal, if you want to use that term, very much market orientated. It's not the government's job to look after you. You know, the government will regulate the people to serve business. And the Labour Party came along and said, oh, you know, we don't like that very much, but we're fundamentally not going to change it. We're just going to look a bit more pained about it. And you know, what we'll do is we'll try, and if we can take some of the, you know, profits from business, make things a little bit better for the people at the bottom. And they did. You know, I'll be honest, anyone who says that the Blair government of 97 to 2010 wasn't better than what had come before is deluded, because clearly things like Sure Start and so on were very good policies. But if I was a young person who can't afford a house, who's looking at a 0 hours contract, who can't get secure employment, who's loaded down with £40,000 worth of student debt, and I'm looking at Labour and the Conservative, what really before 2015 were they offering me that was significantly going to change my life?
But conversely, is there a danger? I mean, in the press a couple of weeks ago, it was being painted as the next election will be Johnson versus Corbyn, dark blue versus dark red. And making it very difficult, you know, people have to go to one extreme or the other. Does that not also create a danger in politics?
Yeah, possibly. I don't see Corbyn as extreme. I mean,
I'm just talking.
Yeah,
about,
no, sure.
What you're saying about the media
profile. I get that. I think the media has spent the last 3 years trying to portray Corbyn as extreme. I think if you took our policies, our manifesto, and went to anywhere else in Europe, you'd find that they would be entirely normal. The idea of owning your own railway system is not something that's considered to be hardcore communism in most of Europe. The idea of, you know, having publicly owned electricity generating firms, or not giving all your state schools to private companies like AET, these are not radical things in the rest of Europe. It's only in this country where we've moved so far to the right that these are considered to be extremely radical. And I think, you know, that the media, which is, yeah, most of the media is frothing numpties, and you know, the Daily Mail's practically Nazi paper, and these people are trying to portray what are effectively fairly mainstream social democratic policies as being Marxism, and it's not just nonsense, but I think the majority of British people see through that.
But do you think that scenario? I mean, to me, it feels a little like when I got interested in politics, which was the early 80s, and you had Margaret Thatcher on one side and Michael Foot, who I always thought was a fascinating politician, but he was painted very much at the time the same way Jeremy Corbyn is now. But what you had then, you had the SDP, whatever came through,
yeah,
and there was a growth of centre ground, because there was that feeling of the two sides moving away to extremes. And there have been some discussions about, is there going to be a new centrist party coming forward? Do you think that's something that might be happening?
Honest answer is I don't know, because of course I think the difference between now and then is that the people who broke away, the basic people in the Labour right who broke away to form the SDP, didn't have the example of the SDP to look at, whereas the current Labour right
that's a very good
the current Labour right are looking at what happened to the last SDP, and yeah, there isn't a single one of them who doesn't know that if they do that, that's the end of their parliamentary career. And they may decide to do it anyway. I'll be honest, there are some elements within the Labour Party who are pursuing a scorched earth policy at the moment. You know, if we can't have the party, no one can, and they're working through the media to try and damage the Labour Party, and that's really unfortunate. And this is where I've got various disagreements with Jeremy Corbyn. Jeremy Corbyn seems to be able to perennially turn the other cheek, and when they slap that one, he turns back, and they slap the other one, and he turns back again. I'm more of the view that if someone slaps you on both cheeks, you headbutt them. And I think
nice non-confrontational.
I think some of these people probably have reached the stage where it would be better for us and for them if they just went their own way.
I think that's a good point to go to our next little block of adverts on. I think then we should talk a bit more about what I was trying to talk about at the beginning of the last section, and the Labour movement on the island. I think people out there would really like to hear a bit about that. So we'll have a few more words from our sponsors and then have a bit more discussion with Julian about that.
Radio with the community at heart. This is Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
White Sight is a ride-based spectacle boutique. Here's how it works. You need glasses? Take your prescription along to the friendly team in Cross Street Ride. White Sight is a boutique shop selling budget to designer frames and sunglasses. Stockists of Gucci, Dior, Dolce & Gabbana, Ray-Bans and many more. You'll be spoilt for choice. White Sight's an independent retailer, so you can shop locally and be assured of first-class service and great glasses. Visit them in Cross Street Ride or check them out on www.whitesight.co.uk.
Braiding Roman Villa, more than just an award-winning museum, the eco-friendly building provides free access to a cafe that has stunning views of the whole of Sandown Bay, acres of free parking and plenty of space for children to play safely in the tranquil setting that's hardly changed since the Romans lived here. Come and try Ben's lunches and Nikki's cakes, all homemade and delicious. The friends of Braiding Roman Villa provide visitors with a free introduction to the villa's history and delight in answering people's questions. Braiding Roman Villa open every day, 10 till 4. Come and treat yourself anytime.
This is Vectis Radio, the Isle of Wight's local community station. Vectis Radio was set up on the 23rd of January 2010. We are a community radio station which promotes local businesses, events, charities and more. The station pays for itself by offering affordable but competitive advertising rates to local companies. For more information, call our sales team on 01983 527 733.
The average radio station has 500 tracks on a rolling playlist. We have over 5,000. This is Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
And we're back on the Monday. Got the buttons right, got the day wrong. Back on the Monday lunchtime debate. Caroline and Jonathan here on Vectis FM 104.6. It's coming up to 20 to 1. And we have in the studio with us Julian Critchley from Isle of Wight Labour, who is discussing many issues with us. But the question we've been wanting to ask, and I think now's the time to put it, is you were saying about improving the profile and standing of the Labour Party on the island, Jeremy. Is Labour really ever going to get a significant representation on the Isle of Wight?
Look, the answer to that is yes, and we have to believe that, because if we didn't believe that, why would we be doing it? It'd be wasting our time. The Isle of Wight, as you know well, Jonathan, has always been willing to vote for non-conservative either councils or indeed MPs. You know, certainly in my lifetime, there's been two non-conservative MPs on the island. They were liberals. And there's been the independent council that we've had. So there is a majority out there that's willing to come together and vote in a non-Tory alternative. And I think one of the issues for us has been challenging this idea that, oh, well, we might be willing to do that, but people around here won't vote Labour. And that was what we were up against before 2017. People say, you know, people around here, they'll vote for a non-Tory, but they won't vote Labour. And we set out in the general election to say, you know, actually, we're going to change that perspective. And we did. You know, we got our best result for 50, 60 years. We got 17,000 votes. easily clear in second place behind the Tories. And we deliberately went out. I think you know, there'd possibly been a case of we'd got so used to losing that we forgot to try to win. And in 2000,
it's a bit like a football analogy, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, you do get to the stage where you start thinking, well, maybe this is all we can expect. And I think one of the things that was really great about 2017 is we had all these new members who joined after Corbyn. You know, we went up from about 300 members on the island to over 1,000, and these new members, that they weren't of the, well, this is how it's always been variety. They were, let's go for this. And so we had that campaign, which was full of energy. You know, I remember you had to have a lot of energy walking from Ryde to Newport carrying the great big heavy Labour banner and turning up. You couldn't open a can of beans on the island without me turning up to try and cut a ribbon. And it was just about saying, we're out there, we're here. And people responded so positively. A lot of islanders, one of the most common things that people said to me when we were out on the streets during the election was they said, I didn't realise the Labour Party was active here. And you know, on the one hand, that's a little bit tragic. On the other hand, how great it is that we were saying we're here, and the reaction we got.
I don't think anyone would say that now, because with you at the helm, there's a much greater Labour presence on the island.
That's not. I have to be very quick to say that's not about just me being at the helm. Yeah, I've only been at the helm since June. I've only been chair since June. It's very much a team effort. You know, it's about all our activists.
But do you think that and what you're suggesting is that Labour can do that on its own, effectively. It can become the party that puts one or two MPs in when we have two seats and puts a majority into the council chamber. Is it, in your vision, going to be the Labour Party that suddenly has 25 councillors, has two MPs?
If you took a place with the demographics of the Isle of Wight, and you put it on the coast, say up in the northwest where I come from, or in the northeast, even on the Kent coast, then this would be, if not a Labour seat, then it would be a marginal seat. The Isle of Wight, in a way, the Labour Party has not. I don't think we've been punching our weight on the island for a long time. I think we are now starting to punch our weight on the island, and I think people who have always had the potential to be Labour voters, who in the past have maybe felt that they've had to vote for one of the minor parties because of that self-fulfilling Labour can't win here idea. I think no one's looking at the election last year and thinking, well, I'll have to give my vote to one of the also-rans because Labour can't win. Instead, they're going to be thinking, well, look, Labour clearly are the challengers, so now I can vote the way I always wanted to vote. And I think, you know, we'll get those natural Labour voters who perhaps weren't giving us their vote before, but we'll also get the tactical voters, because the tactical voters, you know, the anyone but the Tories vote that moves around between the different groups, well, that group is now us. And even if they're not fully fledged, passionate, committed Labour supporters, I'll still take their vote in the next election. So yeah, I think it's possible.
And if you're going to look at historical voting, perhaps anybody who's listening who thinks, I'm not going to vote Labour, they'll never get in, could look to Portsmouth, where we've got Stephen Morgan, the Labour MP, and for years, how many years? I'm not sure how many years, but for years and years it was a Tory seat.
He's the first Labour MP in Portsmouth South. We've never had a Labour MP there. We've never had a Labour MP in Canterbury. We've never had a Labour MP in Kensington and Chelsea. These are places where people said before the general election, Labour can never win here, Labour have never won here, Labour will never win here. The Isle of Wight is just another one of those places. I mean, my view is, no, Labour haven't won here, but we certainly can, and I think we will.
And Stephen Morgan is, I went to a meeting that you organised where Stephen Morgan came over from Portsmouth to talk about his campaign, and I found it fascinating because he did exactly what you're doing. He got out there, he went outside schools, he talk to young people and just encourage people to vote for Labour, and you know, he encouraged them that it was important to vote, and led a very strong campaign, which I don't think he thought he was going to win. He didn't. I think he said he was encouraged by the polls that said that he was in a strong position, and that urged him on to carry on the campaign, which he eventually won his seat. So perhaps that is a role model. for you to follow.
Well, that's why we got him over to ask him how that worked for him and what tactics he used. And actually, we found that we used quite a few similar tactics. Yeah, I do want to come back to you, though. This isn't just about a change of the guard and you know, the new people somehow doing better than the old people. That's not true. You know, we had a message to sell. We had a product, if you like, to sell at the last election, which was very easy to sell. You know, our manifesto was fantastically popular. I had lifelong Tory voters coming out and saying, this is great, we'll have the railways back, we'll have the power companies back. Nationalisation of key public services is popular across the entire political spectrum. And for reasons which, you know, you'd probably have to ask Tony Blair and Gordon Brown about, that had been kept off the Labour policy agenda for decades. If I had been selling the 2010 manifesto last year, then I imagine we might not have got the response that we did. So it comes back to the policies. You know, it always comes back to the policies. Yes, people are very important, but policies have to be the backbone.
So, Julian, if you were the Isle of Wight's MP, what would you do differently? How would you get the ferry companies to help islanders? I mean, I know that's a $1 million question, but
I think the question there is actually if we had a Labour government, would it regulate the ferries?
I think,
because that's the only answer.
One of the things I used to find a bit frustrating on the hustings during the election is that you'd get questions exactly like that, actually, and often about the ferries or the fixed link, and the answer I wanted to give was, you know, we're not electing a president of the Isle of Wight. You know, we're electing an MP who's going to sit in a government, and so what people have to focus on is,
maybe that's what we need.
Well, exactly.
We've got high sheriffs, haven't we?
Well, quite. You know, are we going to have, you know, are you going to have a government which is inclined to do things to help people, or are you going to have a government which is inclined to do things to help business, which isn't necessarily the same thing? And you know, my frustration with Bob, who, by the way, I like a lot. You know, I met Bob a lot in the campaign trail. He's a really nice guy. But sometime, you know, at some point, someone's going to have to tell Bob that he is actually a member of the Conservative Party.
He's got to reflect the Conservative Party views.
Because I read in the paper every week, he's calling on the government to, you know, do this for the trains. He's calling on the government to do this about the ferry companies. Well, he's in a Conservative government.
He writes lots of letters.
The Conservative government is not going to regulate a profitable ferry company. That's not what they do. It's against their religion. You know, and so if we want to change those things, we have to have Labour government. Now, my line thus far has been, if we're going to nationalise the entire country's rail network, we can probably manage a couple of ferries. And certainly we've had some initial talks. I personally have had some initial talks with Andy McDonald about this. We've had three Labour MPs, including two shadow cabinet ministers, over on the island this summer. And we've talked to them about the ferries situation. And they've been shocked at how expensive the ferries are and the standard of the service.
The other thing that I read about as well was the Build It in Britain campaign that I know Labour supports and you personally support. How would that? What difference would that make?
I mean, ultimately, it's all about keeping money in this country and circulating this country. It may well be that we can get we can build a ship, and we can build a new ship for Whitelink, and we can build it in Turkey, and maybe that'll be a couple of million pounds cheaper than if we built it in this country. But every single pound that goes to build that ship goes into the Turkish economy and leaves the British economy. Whereas if we were building that in a British shipyard, it might cost a bit more, but it would be paying the wages of the people building the ship. It would be paying the wages of the companies servicing that ship when they were being built. And this is where, in a sense, the Labour Party has moved its policy, because under the old policy of, forgive me for the term, neoliberalism, the idea was it didn't matter where you got your stuff from. It was all about just getting the cheapest bottom line. And the whole world was a marketplace, and we were competing on equal level with workers in the Far East and with workers in Turkey, who often were paid enormously less and worked under much less safe conditions, so they could produce these things cheaper. I'm fairly unashamedly economically nationalist, you know, and I think the British government should use its purchasing power, which is enormous, to say, if we're going to buy things from companies, you companies have to source those things in this country, at least to a certain extent, to fund British wages. And so the Build It in Britain campaign is something I'm very supportive of. And this is now, that's the difference between Labour and the Tories now. The difference is the Tories are still very much, it's all about the free market, it's all about the bottom line, it's all about wherever you can get it cheapest. Labour is now, actually, we think there's a criteria here which is about supporting people in this country and the economy in this country. And I am fully signed up to that. And so in answer to your question, if you have a Labour MP on the Isle of Wight and a Labour government, then we are much more likely to intervene in the economy to help local people than the Conservatives.
That's interesting. Now, can I come back, because that ties back into something I wanted to ask a moment ago, when we were talking about could it be Labour on the Isle of Wight? What some people would say is that is, and this, I think this is, reflects what you, this whole conversation here in pubs, that's a bit of a pipe dream. What you do have is, perhaps in the majority, a strongly anti-conservative grouping, maybe, but split across a number of political groups. Isn't the initial way to get a change on the island for those groups to work together? At the moment, there doesn't seem to be much evidence of that happening or inclination for that to happen. And some would argue that at the last election, where you had sometimes three candidates against a Conservative, the Conservative got in with maybe a third of the votes. And if there was more cross-party, cross-group working amongst the non-Conservative side, we would have a very different political position on the Isle of Wight.
Yeah, look, I accept that, and I should put on the record here, I've been a lifelong supporter of proportional representation. I think our voting system, it sucks. Yeah, it's undemocratic.
But we're stuck with it at
the
moment,
aren't we? No, absolutely, we are stuck with it. And to a certain extent, that's why I'm in the Labour Party now and not in the Greens and not in the Liberal Democrats, because if you ask me which policies of the Green Party I disagree with, I wouldn't find many. You know, and I've got no problem with Green Party policies. But the bottom line is, you know, they cannot, under first past the post, form a government. Likewise, the Lib Dems cannot form a government.
But if we talk about the local council here, if there was, say, people were looking at seats and saying, who has got the best chance against Conservative in that seat? Mm. Who's got the best chance against Conservative in that seat? We may have, and those people could work together, you may have 25 non-Conservative councillors,
whereas
a number of the Conservative councillors who are sitting now got in through luck because there was too much bickering and conflict amongst their opponents.
But here's my problem with that, is that if you'd looked at that before the last election, then people would say, well, if we look at this, the Labour Party finished fourth in 2015 behind UKIP and the Greens. So obviously these parties are best placed to win in those seats. If you look after the 2017 general election, then it's very hard to argue that the Labour Party aren't best placed now to work in all of those seats. Which baseline do you take when you're deciding who's doing best? I mean, were around 17,000 votes that we got in the election? I don't know.
But does it have to be about who's doing best, and can it be about working together? Because I can't think of a time where there have been more than two Labour councillors on the Isle of Wight.
There have been, but
it's not, certainly not since 2005.
No, but you know, before 19, you know, we haven't had this many votes on the island since 1959. So things have changed,
sure.
and I think my line is they have changed. I think the difficulty is this. If I'm absolutely levelling with you. If we, as the Labour Party, say to people, we're going to work with the Lib Dems, we're going to work with the Greens, lots of cross-party cooperation, then what we become is just one of a number of different groups that are saying, well, we're anti-Tory, take your pick. And that means that come the next election, there's a good chance that people who are anti-Tory will vote for whichever one of those groups that they want. And actually, your message is quite right. If we're going to beat them, we have to coalesce behind one. And so, you know, for us, that one has to be Labour, because if it's not, you know, if it's not Labour, then you know, if we don't say Labour are the only alternative here, we're going to fight for every single vote, then we will lose against the Conservatives. I've no doubt about that at all. You know, my line is the. There's another angle as well, which is people don't like to be told who to vote for. They don't like to have their options taken away, and we certainly had that in the election. One of our biggest recruiting kicks, and one of the things that got most activists out on the street, was when we started one of the minor parties started putting around this Progressive Alliance idea and saying, you know, the Labour Party should stand down on the Isle of Wight. And that infuriated our local members and activists. You know, how dare you tell us that we can't vote for Labour? And even some of our own MPs joined in. You know, Clive Lewis, who I'm a big fan of, you know, actually said this. And I went to conference and tracked him down and shouted at him. But he was very polite afterwards. So you know, people don't like to be told, you have to go into this pen. So our line, and I'm pretty unapologetic for this, is if you want to beat the Conservatives, the Labour Party are now clearly in second place. We are the only party that has the chance of beating the Conservatives in a general election. In a local election, we're going to fight every seat in a way we've never done before. You know, I'm coming back to your point about a deal. There was a deal at the last local elections. There were seats in which the Labour Party and the Green Party had agreed not to stand against each other.
There was an online thing that you could do, wasn't there, where you could trade your vote.
And it didn't work out well. In fact, it put the Conservatives back in. So we had a deal that gave the Conservatives a majority. I'm not sure that's the way to go. I think, you know, we've broken away now from the idea that we're just one of a group of also-rans. And you know, it's now on the island, the Conservatives versus the Labour Party, which is unfair if you are a Green supporter or a Lib Dem supporter. That is, however, the electoral system we've got. And when we've got a different electoral system, then let a thousand flowers bloom and God bless them all. But we don't. We have first past the post. And if people are serious about getting the Tories out, then the option is us.
And when are we going to get a new electoral system, do you think?
Well, that's interesting, because a lot of the new members who've come into Labour are very keen on proportional representation. A lot of them have been in other parties. They've been in the Greens, they've been in the Lib Dems. You know, they're people like me who have always supported PR. It would not surprise me at all if the Labour Party adopted proportional representation as a policy before the next general election. That's my prediction. Don't hold me to it. I'm not putting any money on it. But I
very
think
that's
very likely.
Well, this has been fascinating, Julian. I'm really glad you could come in and you could stay with us for the hour to talk. We've got a couple of minutes left. So what's your closing message about the future of Ireland politics to people out there? Apart from vote for me, obviously.
Apart from vote for me, vote for the Labour Party. I just think people should get involved. I think people should get involved, and I think that whether you are Labour or Conservative, this sense of oh, it'll never change around here, it'll always be blue around here, it's corrosive. It's corrosive to public life, because it means that people don't do enough checking up on what our councillors and MP are doing. But it's corrosive to our civil society. You know, our civil society is based on participatory democracy. It's based on people getting involved. And I got fed up in the general election when I was going around bumping into the same three Conservative little old ladies who were going around with Bob Seeley. You know, it seemed to be the only people that they actually had out on the streets. Well, you know, I'd rather have been bumping into a few more. And I think get involved, because it's only when we are properly involved, when we engage people, when people do get involved in politics, so you get the ideas. Otherwise, you know, we don't have the breadth of ideas, we don't have the breadth of participation that we need to get generally good policy.
Well, I do think pretty much whatever side you're on, get involved has to be a key
good message.
Yeah. Julian, thank you ever so much for coming
thank
in.
You.
Thank you for your time.
You're most welcome. It's been great.
And Caroline, it's time for us to go now. It's just coming up to 1 o'clock. We've got Tony Christian champing at the bit to get in the studio and hit you with 3 hours of entertainment this afternoon. We hope you've enjoyed the show this morning and our guests, Julian and Peter Woodnutt, earlier. We've had a ball, haven't we?
We have. We've had a really good 3 hours.
Yep. Doesn't even seem like 3 hours. So thank you so much for listening, and we will hope to see you at the same time next week with more guests, more chat and more information about what's coming up and the week on the Isle of Wight. Don't forget Isle of Wight Day, and whatever way you're doing during the coming week, have a great one. See you next
time. Thank you.